All right, Richard Arroyo, back for I don't even know how many times you've been on my podcast now. Thank you for joining me.
This is my third. Yeah, thanks, man. It's good to see you again.
Third time, you said?
Third or fourth, I'm not sure. It's been a couple years.
Yeah, and we're both in different locations. I'm in Philadelphia. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see my wife's beautiful, plants in this side. Yeah, nice.
I'm in Texas.
And a pottery wheel. I mean, this is quite the room here. And you're in Texas, right?
All the way down south. Another one day, heading to Chicago tomorrow.
Yeah. So we're both starting our residency in psychiatry soon. And this is actually a podcast that we've wanted to put together for quite some time. But we were kind of afraid to highlight this obstacle that you had to overcome. We thought it could maybe hinder your chances of matching into psychiatry. But it didn't. You know, you matched into your number one program. And what I'm really referring to is you failed level one board exam during the second year of medical school. And so if people don't know what that is. It's just this huge, terrible test. It's 8 hours long or whatever. That tests essentially all the medical knowledge that you learned the first 2 years of medical school. It's traditionally very sciencey heavy, very academic, medicine heavy, extremely challenging, arguably one of the most challenging tests in the medical school and most important. And yeah, man, and I watched you fail that exam. I didn't know how to necessarily even help you in those crazy times. I'm excited to kind of hear your story again and share it with our listeners. So thanks again for being open about this.
Yeah, it's something a lot of people don't want to talk about. So I got a lot of feedback from people and they're actually telling me, you maybe should not discuss this until after you get in, could potentially hinder or put more of an obstacle. And I mean, you and I discussed it for a long time. We've been talking about it for the very nature that it is something that people don't want to talk about. It's an extremely sensitive subject if you fail such a significant exam. It's humbling. It seems to represent you as not just a student, but as a person. People get this impression, you know, I did. And it just made my third year of medical school really kind of traumatizing. That first half was just my worst time in medical school. It was a terrible, terrible time for me. It was that transition from second to third year. Really, really tough.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, you get that first email, hey, Richard, you flunked. So what did you do? How did you even handle that tremendous damage and stress on your life?
Well, you take that exam and then you wait a month to get your results. And it's not an email. If you remember, we go back to that NBOME website and then you click on it and then you open it and you scan it real quick and it either says, you know, passed or failed. And so I remember I got the email that says your scores have been released, and I was on a rotation at the time, and I didn't let myself look at it throughout the day because I didn't want to ruin my day and not be able to function seeing patients, because I knew that I'd be right on the line. I sensed that I did poorly. So I was kind of prepared, but you know, you're holding your breath, you're pulling out your hair, you're chewing your nails, and you're hoping beyond hope that, all right, I hope I passed. I hope that my fears aren't substantiated. I hope to God that I passed. So yeah, I didn't look at it until I got home at the end of that day. And then I went, opened it, and it was that trauma of failed. And I remember I just kind of, you know, world stopped for a second. And then I just didn't leave my room for that night. I didn't want to go, you know, tell my roommates, you know, who were celebrating. I could hear them kind of celebrating upstairs. And, yeah. So I just kind of hunkered down, which told everyone that I failed. I knew they kind of deduced that from the fact that I didn't come upstairs. And yeah, I just kind of tried to figure out what the heck I was going to do, how I was going to approach this. And yeah, it was a terrible experience. So that was that first day, and that was just me isolating.
And I, you know, obviously from the third perspective, my perspective, I wanted to help. And I imagine you just got bombarded with everyone giving their two cents, how you could study differently, study better. And even like our school made you do this like extra training, boards, boot camp, whatever it was called, some class. Did you feel overwhelmed with people trying to help almost too much to the point where it's like, okay, shut up. I just need to get back to the drawing board. Like, how did you kind of get the gears going to get studying again? Because you obviously had to retake this test right away. Or were you in such a depressive episode where you were almost like shell-shocked? You couldn't even do anything the first few days.
I mean, everybody wants to help. Everyone wants to see me through this. They want to support me. I have the benefit of having a lot of friends and emotional support. But yeah, it can be a bombardment. And everyone wants to give their two, you know, cents about how they did it and what I should do. And that got really overwhelming really fast. Because going into it, I kind of had a pretty good idea how I failed, what I did wrong. I had a relative idea of how I was going to approach it. At least I was putting that together in the first 2 or 3 days. And by the time I started reaching out to people, it was probably a week later when I started, you know, confessing the news that, yeah, you know, I failed this. So that was kind of a gradual thing where I just was getting bombarded with advice and I had already kind of determined what I was going to do. At the same time, there's this protocol you have to go through with the school when you fail the exam. And that was probably one of the most traumatizing things about the whole situation. It was just awful. I really didn't feel very supported, quite frankly, by the school. And I think a lot of students who go through this experience probably would say the same thing. And I don't know if it is any school in particular. I think it's just the dynamic of the bureaucratic protocol that they have to go through when a student, you know, fails. But that protocol is just, it's not a very supportive protocol. It's really more of a put your big face on a screen with every professor sitting in a room. And everyone asking questions about why'd you fail? How are you going to get over this? And they're essentially evaluating you to see, hey, is this student going to make it? Do we need to pull them out? Do we need to reconsider them going forward? And you feel that. So it didn't really feel supportive at all. It really just felt like a parole hearing almost. Yeah. That was horrible.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
I didn't expect that at all. I remember I was shocked at that. And then I was extremely pissed off about that for weeks afterwards. And I wanted to write to the school and tell them that this was absolutely terrible, but I didn't do that because I was in such a shocked thing. I had to push all of these emotions to the side and just focus 100% on studying. And so getting into that transition of studying again, after you just spent, you know, 3-4 months of nonstop study and you did it wrong, you got to figure out how to get back into it and do it right. And you don't have that much time to do it. So I technically had, I think, 6 weeks. And I was in the middle of a rotation, and it was family medicine, which was a relatively difficult health exam too. And so I had that scare that, oh my God, I got to pass this shelf exam, this COMSA. I got to pass that. And if I were to fail that too, Jesus, that would be devastating to have failed the STEP or the COMLEX and then also fail this major shelf exam. So I decided I was just gonna, the way I approached it, I decided to pick 2 QBanks and dedicate myself wholeheartedly to these 2 QBanks, get through all of them in 6 weeks. And that was gonna be my primary study method along with first aid and then a bunch of mnemonic systems that I think you and others recommended to me. So I decided to limit my own.
So before you took the second exam, and you know, you eventually, thankfully, we can tell the listeners you did pass. But you know, before that, did you think about quitting medicine? Were you just like kind of like screw this, I'm over it, or what was your mindset at that stage?
Yeah, I don't know if I ever thought about quitting medicine. I feel like I was so invested in it. Consider that as an option so much, but I certainly thought of, am I good enough for this? Can I do this? I'm certainly not up to par with my colleagues. I'm clearly in the bottom percentage of all medical students across the US. So that was a lingering fear and apprehension. And so I had a lot of thoughts about, my God, I might not be good enough to do this. I might not be able to make it. So it was never a matter of quitting. It was just a matter of, wow, I don't know if I'm gonna make it over this obstacle. I had that for a long time.
Yeah. I remember. And that was what I was trying to say to you. Cause I just could hear it in your voice, how you didn't feel confident that you were going to be an adequate doctor, that you were going to be, sufficient to pass this exam. You thought it just kind of was going to be overbearing. And yeah, it was really hard, you know. So I guess we were talking about it before we hopped on the recording here. There's medical students in their second, well, I guess now the start of their third year, who are probably getting those same emails that you got. Did you reach any of those students that had failed the exam before you, and did they offer any advice, or what advice would you offer those students that are getting that same failure in their email right now?
I reached out to one student through a friend of mine who was 2 years ahead of us. One of her dear friends had failed level one. And so she put me in contact with that student, and I reached out to that student and we discussed it for a while. And she kind of told me how she had overcome it over time and just kind of gave me some support and essentially told me, you're going to get through this. You know, you're going to get through this. You're not the only one. People don't discuss it. Gets tucked under the carpet, but you're going to get through this. In all likelihood, most students do. So I would say the same thing to most students, and it sounds super cliche. You're going to get through this. I hope. You're probably going to get through this. It's going to be miserable. It's going to be hell. You're probably going to get through it. I mean, looking back now, I've actually met a lot of students who have overcome a similar obstacle. I've met a few psych residents, actually. I met one in particular who told me how he failed it twice. And he also failed a year, had to redo his first year, failed that step, or his step twice. And at the time he was a, you know, second year psychiatry resident living his dream. He overcame everything, kept on going. And he was so open about it. I was so impressed. And I really admired the fact that he was so open with his obstacle and his failures and how it didn't stop him. I remember he and I sat down and discussed for a long time because I just so respected the fact that he could discuss that. And he, you know, was a guide to, you know, all those who were suffering and kind of going through this very lonely, traumatic experience.
And it's really unfortunate because I feel like it doesn't have to be lonely. If you look at the statistics, it's like, I don't know what they are, but let's just call it 5% of students fail that exam. I don't know if that's accurate, but I think it's right around that. Yeah. That's still a lot of students. And, you know, it's, I think the worst way to handle any kind of depression or just mental health challenge is all alone. You know, I say that all the time. And so I'm glad you were able to connect with other students, and it sounded like they went through it before you did. I don't know if you had a chance to connect with anyone in our class, but you know, I think like what you said, it's this, a failure of level one or the big board exam can be overcome. People can still succeed. You know, it seems like we have all these lectures in medical school talking about how important this board exam is. And this is the thing that residencies look at the most. This is the thing that has the greatest significance for your likelihood to match. Why don't we have also similar lectures adjacent to those that are like, okay, but people can overcome these failures, you know, and it's not necessarily a death sentence. Because I remember talking to you, you know, we've always wanted to do psychiatry. Psychiatry is trending in this more competitive direction. And you were like, Logan, you know, I want to pursue psychiatry, but maybe it's not possible anymore. Maybe I closed that door because of this failure. So how did you get over that hurdle? And how did you then start dealing with this failure in the midst of like residency interviews? And what was that like?
I haven't really woken up until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
I decided to address it straight on in my residency applications and in my residency interview. So one of the first little mini paragraphs that I wrote was addressing my failure, because I knew it was going to come up in every interview that I had. And I knew that there were going to be a lot of secondary applications would be. I just believed that there would be questions in applications that asked, have you had any significant failures during your time in medical school? And lo and behold, that was the case. And in interviews, I wanted to address my failure as opposed to be asked about my failure. So I knew there'd be that inevitable question, what was an obstacle you overcame in medical school or in life? And so I kind of had a pre-prepped type answer about my medical school, you know, step failure. And essentially, I was saying how I had to address all of it. I had to look at my method and myself objectively. I had to step back and look at the whole panorama of who I am and how I study and how I learn. I had to address my weaknesses. I had to reach out to my friends, my family, my colleagues, my professors, therapists. I had to reach out to everyone I could, and I had to somehow convert my failure into progress and my obstacles into, you know, moving forward. And I had to learn how to do this. And so I essentially shaped an answer and, you know, a response around that. And I think that was a big thing, addressing it full on, addressing how I've learned through it, addressing how we're always going to have obstacles we have to overcome in medicine and in life. And this is just a part of the experience. And it's either going to knock you down or you're going to learn from it and get up and keep moving forward and get past it.
So yeah. That's how I shaped it. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just so proud of you, Richard. Like I said, psychiatry was more competitive this year. And, you know, I guess this is a good kind of portion to talk about it. I did score higher than you than the board exams, but you got more psych interviews than me. You know, it's not necessarily so simplistic, like the higher board exam you get, the better you're going to match necessarily. This whole matching into residency is so much more nebulous than that kind of simplistic kind of attitude. And I think med students get so wrapped around higher scores equal higher success. And it's like, no, that's not always true. And I think what you just said so beautifully, like trying to just address it head on rather than having this as something that you're not necessarily proud of, but you're not ashamed of. You know, this happened, I overcame it, I changed my ways. So, you know, I think that there's many other podcasts that talk about specifically for med students, for board prep, study styles, suggestions, mnemonics. That is not this podcast. I want to really focus more on kind of the emotional side of it. So one thing, how did you change your attitude from thinking you are a complete failure? You know, you are almost like a failure at life. I don't know if you ever necessarily felt that way, but I know at least for me personally, if I failed at level one, those are emotions I definitely could have dealt with. How did you overcome whatever that sensation was to realize like, no, I, Richard Arroyo, am not a failure at everything. This is just one aspect of my life.
It's a good question, Logan. And I don't know. I feel like I've struggled with imposter syndrome for much of my life, definitely all through medical school. And I think medical school has amplified it significantly. And then, of course, this failure of the Comlex kicked it up 100-fold. And I felt like an absolute useless failure, the worst medical student, you know, not good at anything. And I was just completely down. I'm going to have to push these emotions to the side so that I can just buckle down and do it. And that probably wasn't necessarily healthy emotionally for myself to do it like that, but I had to do that. Now, I had the benefit of having wonderful support from wonderful roommates and dear friends and family. But the friends going through medical school are really the few who understand how difficult something like this is. So, I mean, having you as emotional support, having my roommates in Alaska as emotional support through this, that's what I had. And I think that's why I got through it emotionally. Had I not had those supports, it would have been absolutely miserable. I don't know how I would have gotten through it, because I did not feel like I had any emotional support from the medical school. On the contrary, I felt like I had the opposite. In Alaska and at PNWU, I felt completely unsupported academically, yeah. Emotionally, academically.
And it's so interesting to hear you describe that instance with the school. And of course, you know, we graduated from our school. We, of course, think very highly of them about certain regards. But I wonder if that same thing happens at other medical schools, that kind of what you talked about, that almost like shaming by the professors, like you are not good enough. And I imagine the professors, that's not their intent. No, and I know they're probably they really care. They want to obviously see us succeed. It only helps them to have a higher board passing success ratio. But their approach, that you felt shamed. You felt even like a more bigger piece of shit. Like that if anything, they should have had, their goal should have been the exact opposite, trying to instill confidence in you. And yeah. So one thing, Richard, you know, I imagine, who knows where our future careers are going to go. But I think maybe I would like to work at a medical school one day. I think that could be something that I would really enjoy. What would you change about how the school supports students who fail?
I don't know. I've thought about that before, because I've often thought about writing a letter to the school about my experience, so that they would know that this is how I experienced it, and this is how other students might be experiencing it also. But an actual effective, you know, proactive change, Logan, I'm not sure. I felt like I became designated as a trouble student from the school. I felt like I became designated a trouble student, as though it was an intentional thing on my part. And that I intentionally, you know, tried to become difficult. I felt like I was designated that.
Or it's maybe like this student didn't put in the work for the past few months, when you clearly were. I saw you working your ass off.
I mean, that presumption goes without saying. Everyone assumes that. You fail a test like this. I mean, even other students, some of them will often, you get that impression, well, you didn't study. You needed to study. Why weren't you studying? That wasn't the case. I clearly wasn't studying correctly, I guess. But then I don't retain information the same way that others do. I had to learn how I can get through such a difficult thing. So what can the school do? I don't know. I don't know what they can do. I know that it was a terrible experience for me from the school. I think that was horrible. I would have liked a different kind of approach, one that wasn't as bureaucratic, one that wasn't so, yeah, judgmental almost. I really felt that. Please understand, I mean, I have nothing but respect for my school for the most part. I mean, they gave me medicine.
They gave you that fancy piece of paper.
And I know that every professor there, they believe in us. They want us to succeed. I know that, you know, and every admin as well, they want us to succeed. But at the same time, it's a business. They're looking out for their own interests. And that's just the way it goes.
And there's this weird dichotomy of medical education where, you know, I, as a future medical educator, I want to teach what I think is important. What throughout my career, I've learned to be the most vital facts. Those same teachings don't always line up with the board exam, and they necessarily don't, oftentimes they don't. And so I feel like medical education faculty don't want to teach to the test, but it's almost, maybe it's a necessity in some regard. And then, you know, sorry, my phone was ringing. I lost my train of thought. Now there's kind of a big change in medical education. The board exam that you failed, that first one, is now changing to a pass-fail. And yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be have as good of effects as we think. You know, maybe it'll take a little bit of the stress off, but now there's just going to be so much more stress on the second level of board exams that you take at the end of your third year, right before residency. So I kind of have mixed feelings about it. What do you think about the level one moving to pass fail?
Well, I don't think it would have made any difference for me, because I failed it. So yeah. I still have just been designated as an unhappy face instead of a happy face, or a red dot instead of a green dot. And perhaps it could have been even a little bit more devastating in that regard for me. I really don't know. So my experience, I don't think it would have made that much difference, because I would have been under the line regardless. I just don't know. I feel like the score itself.
I wonder if it almost would make it worse for a student who failed an exam in the future when it does move to pass fail. Why I say this is I have a few friends who are younger than us in medical school. They're first and second years going through medical school, and they're going to be one of the first people to take this board exam that is pass fail. And their attitudes towards the board exam are different than what we had when we went through the first and second years of medical school. We were under the impression, okay, this is the most important test basically ever. You have to do well and get a high score, as high as you can, to match into the residency. That was at least my attitude. I imagine you had a similar one. Their attitude is, oh, well, I just need to pass. No big deal. It doesn't matter. And it seems like they're having maybe a little bit more of a lazy attitude for it in some regard, because they don't need to score as highly, because now it's just pass. It doesn't really matter. And for someone then to fail an exam when maybe some of their colleagues are basically half-assing it, I think could lead to that person who failed it feeling even more down, even more deep, because they see some of their colleagues not really trying their best and maybe still succeeding.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. Of course, going through medical school, my perspective, I often saw that. I saw students who were just so good and so capable and so brilliant that medical school is nothing for them. They're just enjoying their life, going to classes, you know, studying a little bit and doing fantastic, excelling. Whereas I'm going through it and enjoying it relatively, but at the same time, struggling my ass off all of medical school, those first two didactic years, especially.
Yeah.
We're extremely trying.
So
extremely, extremely trying and emotionally heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I asked you about, you know, what the school could potentially do differently. And I know that was a very hard loaded question. What do you think you could have done differently that could have made you emotionally more sane, I guess, throughout that entire period?
I haven't really woken up. Oh, until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
We're gathered here today to join Mike and Jill in holy matrimony.
So they may file jointly this tax season.
And you are?
April from TaxAct, the tax filing software with the expert guidance to help you file for less and get more.
Works for me. So, Mike, do you take this woman to love, honor, and get her a maximum refund?
I do.
Jill?
Ditto.
I now pronounce you married, filing jointly.
I always cry at filing status updates.
TaxAct.
Switch to TaxAct today and start for free.
See TaxAct.com for details.
I feel like your approach to the first couple years of medical school and all of medical school was very healthy. I wish I had been able to approach it the way you did. You approached it very holistically, where you really balanced out maintaining a social life, maintaining a relationship, fitting in the hours for each one of them. You almost seemed to fit in your social life and your marriage as classes, and that you devoted a certain amount of time to each one of them. And that was just part of your schedule. I didn't do that. I studied, and that was it. I studied because I was struggling so much and I wasn't retaining information. And so, I mean, you'd invite me out to play golf and I can't do that. I can't do that because I'm not going to enjoy it, because I'm going to be so frazzled that I should be studying that I can't go play golf or go out for a drink. I can't do that. So I think that probably came back to bite me, because I wasn't emotionally balanced through a lot of it. I was really just so walking on, you know, on needles that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't in equilibrium appropriately.
You know, I really take the attitude that more hours studying has diminishing returns, but then sometimes I think it even goes worse than that. And I think it has negative effects where you're really not even adding anything. And if anything, getting stupider, you know, sacrificing sleep, sacrificing exercise time, golf, like you described, or going to get a drink with your friend. Yes, you're not spending that time studying, but you're at least using other areas of your brain. You're having that relaxation. And, you know, at least for exercise, stimulating excess blood flow to your brain. And, you know, thank you for paying me that compliment. It definitely wasn't as easy, of course, as Richard made it seem, but that is at least is, I think, one of my suggestions for anyone going and studying for, whether it's the MCAT or the board exams. What I learned is, rather than saying I'm going to do 120 questions over the course of these next 3 hours, I would just say, I'm going to work my ass off for 3 hours. And I would work. And as soon as that 3 hour time hit, game over. I'm going to go play Call of Duty. I'm going to go watch The Office with my wife or take the dogs for a walk. And that was one thing that I really pride myself on, and that I hope I can instill in my listeners. And I think kind of budgeting your time that way, rather than trying to budget your tasks, because you're never going to get everything done. It's always going to take maybe a little longer than you're going to hit a little wrench or something. Shit happens. So that was kind of my attitude. And yeah.
Yeah, it's really well said, man. You're spot on. I couldn't emphasize that enough to any prospective student or current student. You really got to balance yourself out. It's so vital. Yeah, emotionally and academically, really does play a factor, major factor.
Well, Richard, you know, I hope that you can kind of stand as like, I don't know. This is probably not what you wanted out of your medical school experience, but almost like a model of how you can overcome this failure that everyone views kind of as this tremendous failure, but you overcame it. You matched into your number one choice residency. You're going to be a psychiatrist and in this quite competitive field of medicine that it's becoming. You did it. You know, you killed it. And so I hope students aren't going to fail the exam, but obviously some will. And hopefully they can look to this podcast for some inspiration when they're going through the dumps, when maybe they just spoke with their school administrators and it wasn't the best experience. And quite frankly, I hope some school administrators listen to this and realize that how they're helping out these students who fail, and maybe it's not always having the positive benefits on their life that they're really intending. And maybe they need to change some of their approach because I don't think anyone at really any school in medical education is malicious necessarily. They want to see their students succeed. So we have to just take a humble look at ourselves as medical educators to really change this system because, you know, obviously if you get into medical school, you're capable of passing this test. We've already deemed you're smart enough.
That's right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I had a lot of I had a lot of gifts, and I think I've been very lucky my whole life. I think I was lucky to be born with that kind of mindset too, that I've kind of been blessed in a lot of.
Yeah. Well, our internet connection is getting a little weak. So why don't we wrap this thing up? Richard, third time on the show, I guess. You're going to be on a fourth time and probably many times after that. We're going to do a next episode, at least in the next month-ish, the transition to internal internship in our first year of residency. I am utterly terrified. I don't know how much podcasting I'll be able to do. I just want to basically be able to handle the responsibilities and duties of an intern. It's quite intimidating. You know, we finally both are going to be managing our own patients, actually putting orders in. You know, it's real now. So I'm terrified, excited, really all the same, all the emotions at once.
I'm terrified too. I think I've forgotten 4 years of medical knowledge. I'm terrified, super excited, ready to start this new life. Very happy that it's all come around like this. I think you and I have done really well, Logan. I'm really proud of both of us. Despite
Absolutely,
the obstacles,
man.
And we both have them, we made it, man. And I think all your listeners, I think everyone going through these same types of experiences, you know, you can make it too.
I think that's a great way to do it.
The I didn't realize you liked me that way deal. Because it's one thing to receive McDonald's, but an entirely other thing to know that they woke up early to face the world and bring you McDonald's breakfast still hot in the bag.
Appreciate you.
There's a deal for every morning. Now grab two loaded sausage burritos for only $3. Prices and participation may vary. Single item at regular price. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Finally, a bed that senses snoring and automatically responds. Meet the Ergo Smart Base from Tempur-Pedic. Our first system that detects snoring, then automatically adjusts by raising the bed. Get your best sleep all night, every night. For a limited time, save up to $500 on select adjustable mattress sets and experience the deep, undisturbed sleep of Tempur-Pedic. Get full offer details at Tempur-Pedic.com.